If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Merkel Media.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Back It Up Fridays with Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host with the most, Jack Merkel, and I'm here to deliver you the goods on a Friday. I hope you've had a good week and are ready for the weekend. And as you get ready for the weekend, I know you're listening to this. I know you are because you clicked on this, and now you get to listen to this great episode. This is episode 60 this week that we are backing it up to. This was episode 60, The Night Baker. With Eric. was a pretty interesting episode with Eric. He had quite a few different stories to share with us, different experiences. Now, Eric wasn't really on the road much, but his experiences between the Navy as well as warehouse logistics are actually pretty interesting to listen to, as well as some of the times that he does share with him being on the road and being stuck in a pit. Very interesting, very strange, very different, but it was a great episode nonetheless. And I'm glad to present it to you on a Friday. So enjoy this one and just coast until you see tomorrow. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of here. Have a good one. Peace out.
He put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going to Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I'm Long Branch Penny Whistle.
And we are really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience that you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast at protonmail.com, or go to the website hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, you can reach that way as well. Either way works for us, just get a hold of us. And if you want to be prepared for that emergency in your life, just go to preparewithhll.com. No need to look anywhere else. Don't need to go to Walmart. You don't need to go to any of these other stupid stores. We got a store right there for you online at preparewithhll.com. There you can get yourself emergency preparedness food that will last up to 25 years on the shelf. So whenever that emergency strikes, you are good. Actually, Dad, I had a close call this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What happened?
The basement flooded.
Did it really?
Yes, it did.
Wow.
Yes, it did. Now, it wasn't a food emergency, but it was close to being an emergency with the studio.
Epic proportions.
Yeah, I was like about to put it into hyperdrive operation, save the studio, you know? But it didn't get as bad as it looked at first. The water was growing. I was like, where does it... Like, it's a hit and miss thing. Like, sometimes we could have torrential downpour and no leaking, and then sometimes it drizzles and it's all of a sudden a river in my basement.
Wow.
It's so annoying. But yeah, so we almost had an emergency here at the Merkel household. Well, the young Merk household, and you're the old Merk here.
Yeah.
And then there's Jack, who's the young Merk. Anyways, preparewithhll.com and you can get yourself emergency preparedness food and supplies.
And it gets delivered right to your house.
Right to your house.
No having to go out and pick it up.
Yep.
It just comes to your door.
Just put your mask on, open your door, get your supplies, close the door, and take your mask off.
There
you'll be
you
fine.
Go. You'll be all right.
All right.
And they have so much more than food.
They do.
They really do.
They really have
all kinds of cool stuff. You should check it out. Just go to their website. Check it out.
Our website.
Go to our website and check it out.
Prepare with HLL.com. Okay. We got a voicemail line. Dad, what's the voicemail?
The voicemail is 515-585-MERK. Or 6375. That's 515-585-6375.
And we do have 5 voicemails sitting and waiting that we're not going to get to this week, because next week we are bringing the women in our lives into studio with us. My wife, Lindsay, and my mom, Michelle, my dad's wife. They're going to be in studio.
That's going to be exciting.
For Mother's Day.
Yes, it is. It's Mother's Day.
So we're going to have a fun Mother's Day show coming up for you guys next time we are live on the mics. And we have a favor to ask of you all listening to the show right now. If you could just call into the show and wish the ladies a happy Mother's Day.
And while you're at it, you know, you're wishing it to your own wives and your own moms.
Yeah. But... wish our wives and moms.
just wish happy Mother's Day, you know.
To all the ladies of the land.
All the ladies that, you know, the ladies that you know.
Yeah.
Your mom, your wife.
You're always so considerate, Dad. You're thinking about everybody else. I'm just like, yo, wish my mom and my wife a happy Mother's Day. And you're like, and the people in your life, too. I'm like, don't worry about them. You're always thinking about other people.
That's what we're supposed to do.
I guess so. I guess. Anyways, that's what's coming next week. We're going to have a Mother's Day show where we're hanging out with the ladies in our lives, talking about what is it like being married to a truck driver. It's going to be fun. We're going to have some good conversation, and I'm sure Mom has some things to say, but we'll see if she freezes behind the microphone.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
see that happening too.
She's chatty when we're watching TV, I can tell you that.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to watch the movie, but I want to talk.
I'm talking to you. I'm just turning the volume up. So yeah, I'm listening.
But we're gonna hit the record button. Everything is going to be crickets in here, I'm sure.
They'll be hearing you and me.
Yeah, so help us out with the show next week and leave us voicemails. We're going to go over voicemails with the ladies and stuff. We're going to have some fun next week. So look forward to that. This week, we have Eric coming on the show, right, Dad?
Yes, we do.
We had a great conversation with Eric, so let's get to him right now. Today we got Eric on the show. Eric, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
Awesome, man. Glad you're here.
Dad, say hi.
No, I was gonna say.
He's looking at me like,
hey, Tony and Brian.
I wasn't gonna say it. I was just looking at you.
I saw you look over at me. I was like, I'm waiting for it. And he didn't say it.
It was on the tip of my tongue. Next time.
You know, it is what it is.
So we got an interesting guest here today because He spent time in the Navy. He's a military veteran, and he's got some ghost encounters from on base. Mm-hmm. He's got a UFO sighting in the Navy. He says he has some odd things at sea happen. Green flash, which I'm interested because I'm like, ooh, Most is this underwater green flash in the sky? What? But then he also in civilian life worked in a pipe warehouse, a plumbing warehouse, moving company. So, Eric, man, you are a man of many trades.
How about it?
Yeah, I'm working on trade number 4 right now.
Yeah, what's that?
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I was getting into cybersecurity, and it's a bit of a rough transition because, you know, entry level position, they want 3+ years of experience and some pretty crazy industry certifications. I got one under my belt, but I'm working installing security systems right now. So I've kind of left the pipe warehouse and then gone into, you know, installing stuff at in people's homes.
That's really cool. I did that. One of the first things I did when Michelle and I were first married.
Yep.
1988. I was in.
Everything's wireless now.
Yes. It's a whole different world now, man. We wired everything back then. You know, we were running wires in houses. I did a lot of commercial stuff back then. It was
the kind of security alarm he put it, he was installing was if you opened the door and you weren't supposed to, a rock fell off and hit you on the head.
That is Fred Flintstone style. Ago, man. That is forever. That's a whole other life. Man. That's a life ago.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Actually, it's an interesting job. Doing that, it was interesting when I did it. I'm sure it's still interesting mm-hmm. now. You know, you get to meet a lot of people, and
definitely,
you know, the things that you do and the things you get into. It's really interesting, especially nowadays. Like you said, with it being, you know, wireless and all.
Yeah.
So I worked for ADT years ago. That was the company I worked for, and that was, you know, forever ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a truck driver now, and I've been for almost 30 years. So
well, ADT's still out there. So
yes, they are. I see their trucks. I don't ever see any familiar drivers. So, I mean, you figure 30 years, a lot of people have come and gone, I'm you know? Sure. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, let's start off with on-base ghost encounters. We're going to work in a reverse fashion today. Usually we go into more of the industry talk and then we save the oddball stuff for the end. I want to get into the oddball stuff in the beginning. So we're going to go into the ghost talk, UFO talk.
Cool.
And then we're going to go into his experiences in the Navy. And then, you know, we'll see how time goes. Maybe we'll want to bring in Eric back on again if we don't get the chance to go through it all. But Eric, start us off here. On base, ghost encounters, the night baker. What is he doing? Baking cakes for everybody? What are we talking about?
Sounds cool, doesn't it? Yeah, it just has that ring to it.
Well, so. He was known as the night baker because on base, this was the dining facility, right? So we called it the base galley, you know, because it, you know, the bathroom's called the head, the kitchen's called the galley, even at shore. So that's what I did. I was a cook. So started off, they called them mess management specialists because it was the mess hall, the mess decks. So you were a mess management specialist. And then they changed the name to culinary specialist.
Ooh, amazing.
And then after that, they might have changed the name again to down with the more logistics, but I'm pretty sure they're called culinary specialists. But so from my shore duty after sea, I was at the base dining facility in San Diego, what they call 32nd Street Naval Base, which is where all the small ships, you know, all the destroyers, the cruisers, the frigates, the various landing ship dock, you know, what they call gator freighters because they carry around Marines and all their stuff. But this was the dining facility over where all the barracks and the other facilities were, what they call the dry side. You get the dry side and the wet side. Wet side's where all the piers are, dry side's where all the office buildings were. So anyways, they used to have a guy who would bake everything at night because that's your baker's hours, right? You got show up in the late afternoon, work all night, all your stuff's fresh as can be, and you leave in the morning. So this guy was the night baker. Went in there at night, baked all night. He was the only one there. Guy has a heart attack and dies on the floor back in the bake shop. He was the only one there. Nobody was there to help him. So he laid there and died. They didn't find him the next day. Well, he's still there. So, I was back in the bake shop because I was the baker, and they've switched it to, you know, baking during the day so that, you know, this kind of thing never happens again.
So you're the day baker.
Yeah. The day baker.
Gotcha.
And, it's in the back corner of this big room, or this big building. So you've got this back corner where the bake shop is. So I've got my big mixer, the big the dough cutter and stuff for making rolls and whatnot, and a bunch of tables. But in the very middle of the room, I had this refrigerator, and it was like a walk-in, but it was like a cell, walk-in cell. I mean, there was a refrigerating unit on the top, and you could walk completely around this thing, but it was just like this big insulated room with a big door in the middle of it. So I'm the only one that uses this refrigerator. No one really comes in, does anything, except for me, because that's where all my stuff is. All my cookies and bread products and everything that is kind of basically what they call retarding, so that it doesn't rise too fast. So it's kind of fermenting and rising really slowly. Anyways, I'm rolling out either doing an Italian loaf, or I'm doing cinnamon rolls or something. I'm kind of like, I'm standing at my table, big, long stainless steel table, and I'm kind of like rolling out logs of dough. So I'm playing with my dough, basically, and I'm shaping them into either, from what I can recall, either cinnamon rolls or French bread or like an Italian loaf. And I'm kind of looking down, and out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody coming towards me out of the dining facility. And then they go into my refrigerator, my reefer. And I corner of my eye, guy dressed in white pants, white shirt, walks past me into my refrigerator, opens up the door and walks in. And I have to go, huh, who's in my reefer? No one goes in my reefer. And like, I listen to the door open and then slam shut. And I'm kind of waiting for him to come out. Like, who is this guy? And then I walk in and there's nobody there. And so I was like, that's really weird. So I go over to the one of the facilities managers, one of the guys who's there to kind of, you know, clean out pipes and work on the building itself. And I was like, hey, it was really weird. I watched this guy walk into my reefer, and then I looked and there was nobody there. And he's like, oh, you saw the night baker. Was he wearing white? I'm like, yeah, he was. Holy crap. And so then they tell me about how this guy was baking at night and had a heart attack and died on the floor, and how they see him occasionally. And like, I kind of was like, huh, that's really weird, but whatever. I'm not super superstitious, but you know, a lot of sailors are. And the only other weird thing that happened is I was cleaning up for the day, and I was about to leave, and I look back and my mixer turns on by itself. You know, those really, really big Hobart mixers.
Yeah.
That you have to like really jam the button on to turn on. This thing just kicks on and starts going on low speed by itself.
Wow.
And I'm like, it's really weird.
That is.
And the guy washing the dishes goes, oh, you just tell him to quit. He'll stop.
It's just normal. It's fine.
It's just normal. Like he's like the guy that did all the pots and pans and everything was in the next room over. And he's like, yeah, I've seen him before. And he's done that to me. So, just tell him to quit and he'll stop. And I was like, oh, okay. It's really weird. You know, it harkens back to, you know, a couple of encounters I've had, one at Alcatraz when I was taking a tour, and then one when I was a kid, at my buddy's place, you know, and I was like, it's really weird, but I believe you guys now. So that's the story of the Nightmaker.
Wow.
All right, so I mean, you say Alcatraz, and I gotta hear
exactly.
Like, you can't listen, Eric. Listen, you know about my other show. Like, I can't
drop that bomb.
You can't say that and not
pull. You can't just throw it and not pull the pin.
This is gonna turn into a ghost show. I don't care though. Yeah. Tell me about Alcatraz.
So we go to San Francisco for Fleet Week, and I take an Alcatraz tour, and it's one of those, you know, kind of self-guided tours. They put the earphones in, you know, the headset in, and you got different guys that'll tell you certain things about Alcatraz as you're walking around. Well, we get to the solitary confinement cells. And they tell you to, you know, it's the voices of all these guys telling how they would entertain themselves while they were in solitary confinement, because once they shut the door, it's pretty much pitch black in there. But they got the doors open, and I walk through the entrance level, and there's this wave of dizziness hits me like a truck. I was like, boom, I was almost on my butt. And I was just kind of like, had to stumble around a little bit. I was taken aback because it was just this massive amount of vertigo, and I got my composure there for a couple of seconds and kind of looked around. I was like, oh, that was weird. But when I walked out, same thing happened. So I don't know what the heck that was. I didn't see anything, but man, I felt it hardcore.
Yeah, I've been to Alcatraz. I was at Alcatraz in 2017. My wife was pregnant with my son, and we went to Alcatraz, and I was like, nothing's happening. Like, I wanted something to happen. Nothing happened to me. So it's at least I know somebody that had an experience.
Yeah, it was pretty weird.
That is weird.
Have you ever been to Alcatraz, Dad?
No.
No?
I've never been to the West Coast.
No?
I've been as far as Minnesota.
Ah, I got you. Okay. Yeah, so, okay, well, Alcatraz. Yeah, that place, I mean, has a lot of bad juju on it, so it doesn't surprise me that people have experiences there. I just wasn't fortunate enough to have any myself. And didn't you say you had an experience at your friend's house? Is that what you said?
Yep.
Yeah, when I was like 13.
Let me hear.
I was spending the night at my friend's place, and you know, waiting for his mom's boyfriend to come home, and we're staying up because he works like second shift, so he gets home at like, you know, 12:30 midnight. It's 12:30-ish. It's, you know, right around the time when he should be coming home, and we hear the door open, the screen door open and slam shut, footsteps walking down the hall past us and into the bedroom. And we're like, oh, cool, Gary's home. Let's go hang out with him. And then we go out there and he wasn't home yet.
Wow. That's weird. Yeah. I tell you what, for two 13-year-old kids, that would freak me out.
Heck yeah.
I mean, like, heck yeah. You know what? Gary's not home. Let's get out of here.
Yeah,
time to skedaddle.
Time to go for a walk.
Yeah, let's time to play Scooby-Doo and get going. This is a Scooby-Don't moment. Let's get out of here.
What an old school reference. Oh, man. Oh, that's funny.
But, you know, I do have a question, though. I have a question about your Navy time. How do you become the baker? And I know it sounds like a dumb question, but when you join, like, do they ask you what you want to do, or do they take people who already know, like, have those type of skills in the Navy, and then they put you in that? You know, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm just curious. Yeah. Like, how do you become the baker? How do you become that guy that does that job?
Well, you got to be a cook first, and so you go to like MEPS. It's where they, it's basically where they qualify you for whether or not you're fit for duty physically. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you'll do your paperwork and everything, and they kind of assign you your job rating. Some people want to be electronics technicians. They want to work on jets. They want to work on radar. And you have to score high on your ASVAB to get there. Well, I really didn't give the ASVAB at much of a, you know, much effort. So I didn't score super high, but I scored high enough to do pretty much whatever I wanted, but not high enough to have super technical rates. But I wanted to be a chef when I was a kid. So, you know, I was already in culinary school. So I wanted to be a cook, and they were just like, okay, you know, and, went to training in, Lackland Air Force Base, which is where I was on 9/11. So that was fun. And, they teach us how to basically prep and cook meals in a very buffet like setting. So you're kind of, you get all the food out, you make breakfast, and while breakfast is going on, you're making dinner, you're making lunch. Lunch has to be done completely panned up and everything ready before lunch ever starts. So because feeding people, it's an hour and a half. You have an hour and a half to feed 300 people. So breakfast an hour and a half, lunch an hour and a half, dinner's an hour and a half. So when we're out at sea, all that refrigerator space back where your uncle was talking about where they would store the bodies. As a makeshift morgue. Well, that's the refrigerator space where we store all of our fresh food, all the vegetables and fruit and everything that needs to be refrigerated goes down in the reefer decks. Well, you don't, when you're going out to sea for six months, you don't use that space for bread. You don't use it for cake. You don't use it for pie. You don't use that space for anything like that. So you have to make it all.
Okay.
And I was the one chosen of the candidates because I could work by myself and I could get, you know, my chief could say, make 48 loaves of bread, 600 cookies. Actually it was more like 1,000 cookies, cause I just make a double batch and they'd all disappear.
Sure. I'm sure they did.
Make all the cake, make all the pies, and make a breakfast pastry. And then sometimes I'd have to make hamburger buns and I would have to make pizza doughs and that kind of stuff. So sometimes it was a, you know, a long night of making a bunch of dough and making a bunch of stuff. But, because I knew my stuff and I could work by myself and I was, you know, motivated enough to get everything done. That's why I was the baker, and bakers work at night, especially out at sea. Because there's too much stuff going on during the day. You know, I have to have the mixer, because there's really only one, because galleys on a Navy ship are relatively small, especially on a destroyer. It's one of the larger spaces inside the hull of the ship, but it's pretty small. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a whole lot of space. So you have to kind of stagger what you're making so that you have enough space to make it, you know?
Sure.
Like, when I was making cookies, I'd have sheet pan upon sheet pan upon sheet pan of cookies laid out where they serve the food. And I made a lot of friends.
I bet.
Because they were always coming around going, "Hey, Metz, can I have a cookie?" Like, yeah, no, sure. You good. Can. And you know, when your uncle was talking about mess cranking, that's guys that are there for 3 to 6 months and they're there doing the dishes. They're there prepping the vegetables. They're there, you know, the cooks really just do a lot of the cook stuff. You know, they cook the food, they prep everything, but a lot of the ancillary things have to be done by more manpower than we have in that division. So that's why they pull like brand new sailors, and you'd get them. They complain about, you know, the Navy. I spent 2.5 years learning how to work on radar systems in the Navy, and they're sending me the dang cooks.
I'm peeling potatoes. What's going on?
Potatoes. They get all bent out of shape about it, but it was, and I was like, you know, it's just how it is, man. But most of those guys, you treat them right, and they're good, because most of them, like 90% of the guys that come through were good dudes, good girls, and they'd be your friends. So, you know, and I had the unique position of seeing every single person, pretty much every single person, 3 times a day. So you kind of get to know just about everybody.
Sure. That's neat. I was just curious how that all played out, you know.
Yeah.
You know, something like
that. I mean, the thing that he said that got me, I was like, holy crap, 300 people in an hour and a half.
Man,
that's more than one person a minute you're shoveling food to. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's a go, go, go kind of environment.
Yep.
Man. Yes,
it definitely is.
You got to have the logistics worked out for that, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Well, all right. So did you have a UFO experience, or did somebody relate it to you while you were in the Navy?
No, that was a fleeting glimpse of something weird while I was driving home one night. You know, I was on a road trip. I was in the middle of Tennessee, probably around Memphis or something, at like 2 in the morning going home. And I'm kind of just, you know, looking around, and I see a green light kind of twinkling, and I'm going, huh. Well, I never seen a green star. I mean, it was green, like it should have been on an airplane blinking at me green and red, but it wasn't. It was solid and kind of twinkling a little bit. So I focus in on it, and I'm going, huh, I've never really seen a green star. And then it starts to move, and I'm like, well, it should be blinking if it was a plane. And it moves a little bit further. And then shoots off like with a big long tracer, like you see a shooting star. And I'm going, oh, what was that? That was weird.
That's cool. That is cool, dude.
So what do you think about that stuff?
It's amazing. It's a whole different world between the older and younger. It's like, that's cool. What do you think about that stuff? Yeah. I'm like, I got no questions.
I mean, no, it's just like,
that's crazy.
I'm interested because, you know, when I saw off the turnpike when I was driving my truck, I saw it multiple times, different nights, same thing. It was in a V shape, hovering. I could see the outline of it, some lights. I looking at it, and I'm like, that, I mean, it not just a normal V shape, but like, it was like a check mark where like one side was shorter than the other. And I'm just like, what the heck is that? I mean, is it a drone? Or is it, you know, is it really, you know, extraterrestrial thing happening here, or what? What are your thoughts when you saw that light and everything and the way it acted? Did you get the sense that you were looking at some kind of military technology, or are you talking about, you know, maybe you saw something from, you know, a different galaxy or something?
I didn't dwell too much on it because I was driving.
And
I was
Come on.
That was weird. I'm going to leave it at that.
There you go.
I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole of possibilities, but it was an odd experience. And I look back at it as some sort of validation to what other people are experiencing and what they see. And I'm going, well, I've seen some pretty weird stuff and experienced some pretty weird stuff too. So, you know, I mean, so whatever they have experienced and what they draw from it, that's up to them. And I'm not going to judge.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
Well, yep. I'm with you on that.
I wanted you to tell me it was aliens or something, but it's okay.
What he wants you to say is, yeah, something looked out the window and we waved.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he's waiting
for. I wanted you to tell me you saw Bigfoot in the UFO or something like that, you know?
If only.
It's actually really interesting. I always find that stuff interesting because so many people see these, you know, see things, they see something, and they're seeing something. No, I don't ever discount that.
No,
you know,
it's like I've got down there the green flash. And if you've ever heard about the green flash, it's something sailors see. When the sun goes down, at the very, very tip of it going across the horizon. When conditions are right, it'll flash green. You know, it could be Davy Jones, or it could be, you know, a light reflecting off of dust and, you know, sea spray making a green flash whenever the last bit of sun goes down across the horizon.
Yeah,
well, that's really neat.
I've never heard of that.
I didn't either. I'm, you know, that's actually really cool.
I'm disappointed Uncle Mark didn't bring it up to me in the conversation I had with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about the stars at night. My goodness. When you're out at sea and there's absolutely no other lights because, you know, you're a warship and you've got to turn them all off. It's amazing. You know, nobody on the continental United States can see stars like that.
That's neat.
I feel like it's something that I probably can't even imagine. Like, I'm trying to picture a sky riddled with stars, and the way you guys describe it, it's just like, no, that's not even it.
Yeah. It sounds so beautiful. I mean, yeah. It just sounds cool. Yeah.
Just, yeah. You ever seen those long time lapses?
Yeah.
Where you can see the Milky Way like that?
Yeah.
It's basically like that in real time.
Wow. That is so cool. That is so cool.
Oh, envy. Envy runs through my veins right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I those are the kind of things that you carry with you for the rest of your life. I mean, those beauty images of nature. And, you know, I'm never going to have that because I'm never going to be out at sea like you guys have. I mean.
But you could.
Nope. Not.
You can join the Navy.
It's not really. It's not really in my cards, that's for sure. So, but what are some of the odd things that you've had happen at sea? I mean, are we talking like just things that make you go, or did you like have a sea monster come up and grab the ship?
No, nothing weird. Interesting, but I mean, nothing really weird. You know, the only time we've really, I've seen something that was just a phenomenon that was, that not a whole lot of people see is, we were out doing, gun quals. And so we were out on the back shooting pistols and whatnot at targets. And the ship started slowing down. And what they do is they've got this reversible pitch propeller. So they can shove it in full reverse while it's spinning the same direction. And the whole entire ship, just imagine being in a three-story building in an earthquake, because the whole thing kind of shunters. It goes cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Like, wow. Everything shakes horribly. And you're like, why are we slowing down? Because, you know, when they see a whale, they'll slow down. They'll do that. They'll pull full stop. And so they don't, because they don't want to hit a whale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bad press on that one. So they call, they call off the range. So we're kind of standing there going, well, what is this? And then I look up ahead and I see like this line of white water, you know, something's under the surface, just going crazy. And it is coming at us fast. And it's a line like, I guess a couple of feet long if you looked out on the water. So it's a good distance out, and it's coming towards us. And what it was a very large school of fish being devoured by lots of other fish.
Huh.
So it wasn't like a bait ball like you'll see on some of those nature shows.
Mm-hmm.
But they were swimming through the water and they were jumping out of the water. So you see these, a bunch of little fish and then tuna following them. And then after the tuna, dolphins, and then out comes a flipping killer whale. Like, I was like, holy crap, this thing's killer whale, big gigantic orca comes out of the water following the dolphins. It was pretty crazy.
Talk about watching the food chain in action.
How about it?
Wow. Was there ever a second at that point when you were watching it and you weren't sure what was happening? Did like the idea of like a missile strike ever come to your mind? Because when you started describing it, that's the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, were they under attack or what?
No, because it was coming right at us. And I was like, huh, what is that? Because nobody else was really, you know, they didn't call general quarters. They didn't call anything. So they slowed the ship down. So I'm figuring whale. And here comes this line of choppy water coming straight at us. And I was like, huh, what is this? It's coming right at us. So, I mean, it's not like they can really do anything. We're pretty big.
Wow.
That is really neat.
Yeah.
That had to be an experience. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing that happen.
And I imagine sometimes that does happen, doesn't it? Where you guys are sailing and, you know, you catch a whale or shark or something in the propellers. Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I mean, when we're cooking along at 30 knots, it makes this enormous rooster tail, like the biggest speedboat you've ever seen. The rooster tail that comes off the fantail of a destroyer going like 30 knots is got to be 15 feet high.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That is. I had no idea that it was that, you know, it would be that big, that large. That's cool.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I should have spent some time in the Navy.
Yeah.
Too late.
Yeah, it's a little late. They don't want me anymore. They're not accepting your kind.
My kind. What, old?
Yeah.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they'd accept me. I'm 35. I think there's a cutoff.
There's a cutoff. You got to be 35 on boot camp.
Really? So I can
still
go.
You can
still
do it.
I can still go, like, right now.
You can still make it.
You have to be 34.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're too old. Yeah. Tony's like, yeah, like I was going to go.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go. No.
It wasn't going to happen.
I appreciate the soldiers, but I am definitely not one of them. That's for sure. So, Eric, man, civilian life, pipe warehouse. Talk to me about some of the stuff that you guys have gone through there.
This pipe warehouse, that was fairly recent in my, you know, my journey to where I'm at now. You know, this pipe warehouse is in Austin, and Austin is, you know, growing like crazy, you know? So there's always a lot of different jobs going on, a lot of different buildings being built. And, you know, I've got several wonderful stories, like the old down in the hole story that I called in about.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
That was a fun one.
Yeah.
That was stress inducing right there.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, because they throw us in these trucks and they're flatbeds, you know, and it's like a Freightliner, and it's I think it's got like a 24-foot bed on it, and with air brakes. So, but I think the gross vehicle weight is just under what you would need a CDL for. Because we were going all over the place in those. And I sure as heck don't have a CDL.
So you hope you don't need a CDL then.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need a CDL. So, I mean, this particular place is like downtown right next to the Capitol building. So we load this thing down with like PVC and cast iron pipe. And it's one of my first times going there. So I have to call the customer and go, hey, where do you want it? How do I get there? They're telling me, all right, go to this street, go through the gate. You'll see the big hole and then you'll see a ramp. We're down in the hole. And I'm like, okay. So, I go. And there's two holes, but they're like, yeah, we're down in the one onto the left. So I nose this truck down this dirt ramp, and it starts to slide around on me a little bit, and I'm going, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap, you know, kind of white knuckling it all the way down this big gigantic hole, because they have to put in the basements and the, you know, the parking garages and all that other good stuff. So that's what they do for drainage when water's coming down. So the plumbers are down there rigging up these pipes to carry the water away. Get down in there, and I've nosed it down into the hole, and there's not a whole lot of dry ground. So, and they don't have a Skytrak or anything to offload me, because they've got these these what they call Skytrax. It's a really, really big forklift that with a big old extendable boom on it. So they'll come over and they'll pick up your pipe load off of that or all your pallets and everything. And then you're good to go. But this time they didn't. So we had to bust all these bundles of pipe and hand off load them. And then I got to turn around. And so I'm trying to turn around an empty truck down in a mud pit to go back up the dirt ramp. So pretty much almost get the truck stuck a couple of times, just maneuvering it around the mud pit to get it up the ramp. And then you get up the ramp and the tires start to spin. So you have to slowly back down to get another run at it. And I had three runs, and then all of a sudden she caught and I was up and out of the hole. And then I had to go back like 2 days later.
One time's not enough. You need to do
no, that one time more, was never enough.
More experience is better.
Yeah. I learned to back it down the ramp.
Yeah,
I bet.
Yeah, I imagine at least it takes half the workout for you. Still getting up though. I mean, you're probably spinning tires and trying to just get it to grab, especially with an empty truck. Then
with an empty, yeah, it was an experience. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have here on the email that you blew out two tires. Was that done at the same time?
No, that was one of the other guys. So we've got our big trucks and we've got some pickup trucks. Well, he's one of the like F-series pickup trucks that we run needed some new tires, but he went out to the job site and he got going and he blew a tire out. And so he had to dig himself out to get the tire, to get the truck jacked up, to get the tire on. And he's like, all right, cool, I'm good. And he gets going, he blows the other tire.
That's a bad day. That's just a bad day. Should have stayed in bed.
Yeah. And we had another guy got one of those trucks stuck up to the, especially the front axles on them. He got it buried all the way up to the axles on all both axles, front and rear. And he had to get one of the Skytrax to go over there and get a chain up underneath him and lift up the front of the truck and drag it out so he could get out of there.
Jeez.
Yeah, some of these job sites are just,
yeah,
you know, they're rough.
Oh my word. I can imagine. You know, you're getting there when there's nothing even there yet.
Yeah.
You know, you're delivering bikes. Yeah.
I've got down here because we deliver to, you know, there's a big Google complex going in and deliver stuff out there. The Tesla Gigafactory is getting put in. I've been out there a bunch of times and it's going in like crazy, but man, you gotta watch out because they've got holes dug for pylons and they're not really marked. You got to watch out. Otherwise you're going to get you're going to get a tire stuck in one of those.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. how long have you been living in Texas?
Probably about 5 years, 6 years now.
Do you consider yourself like a Texan at this point? Like a,
my guess.
Okay. So how do you feel about these big, you know, major corporations moving into Texas? I have a lot of friends in Texas and some of them don't think very favorably of these big giant corporations moving into their land.
Well, they're bringing in a lot of economic activities because we didn't really even slow down during the shutdown pandemic last year. There were still, construction workers got to work. So we were still delivering to construction sites out there. They're still building stuff. They keep saying that commercial real estate's going to tank, but out here they're still building them. Texas is making it very, very lucrative for these companies to come in and set up shop here. And there's a lot going for it. I mean, it has its own power grid, however reliable that is. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of, it has a port, several ports, and it has a lot of highways coming in and out. So, and a big border with Mexico. So it's got a lot going for it economically speaking. So they'll position themselves here in Central Texas because, you know, we don't have a whole lot of weather events. You know, I mean, hurricanes, they rarely make it over to, 300-400 miles inland. It just becomes a pretty rough storm by then. You know, you got the occasional snowpocalypse, but that was a once in 100-year event. You know, and I'm from the Midwest. I'm originally from around the Cincinnati area, so I mean, I've dealt with snowy conditions.
Yeah,
it's just that down here they have no snow removal at all. I mean, their snow removal is the sun.
I just say it'll melt. Tomorrow's another day. Sun will come out,
which is why it's shut down for a week.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, I mean, I look at it like Texas is a business friendly state, you know, that's
the only
the way it is.
I guess the downsides to it is it's just attracting a lot of people that aren't, you know, that aren't right, from here.
That's true. That's a good point.
When I asked that question, that's what I was thinking about, because the people who I've talked to and stuff, they lived in Texas their whole life. And it's just like, we don't like these outsiders around.
Well,
these
when you import people, you import ideas too. What they're used to and all of that. And I don't mean for it to sound like I'm being mean or judgmental or any of that stuff, but you know, it is what it is.
It's done. One thing is increased property values like nothing else.
I'm sure it has.
Oh yeah, I bet.
I'm sure it has.
We're trying to get out of the city and into, you know, a couple 10 acres of land, and it's proving very difficult. Everything is either overpriced or moves faster than we can on it.
That's the way it is even here in Pennsylvania. I mean, I have a friend who's a realtor, and he told me that in my house is nothing special. I mean, it's not an ugly house, but it was built in 1969. It's it was renovated about 5 years ago when I bought the house. And in the 5 years that I've owned the house, he said if I sold my house today, he's very comfortable with telling me that I'd walk away with six figures in my pocket. And it's just like, holy crap, you know? Trust me, Tony's been thinking about it. You know? But the problem is, where am I going to move then? You know, there's nothing for sale. Like, I was looking at properties and stuff in the area that I want to live. And it's just, there's nothing out there that, you know, is move-in ready for me, you know? So I feel you. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So the pipe warehouses, in the past though, you're not there now, right? Cause you're doing the cybersecurity.
Well, I'm doing security installs right now.
Okay.
Yeah, security systems.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there's I've kind of left that, you know, that side of me, because when the whole genesis of this is to, like, you know, I wanted to cook for a living. And then, you know, we're really, chefs are not, they don't have the greatest lifestyle. They're always working. They're always gone. They're, you know, doing nights and weekends and holidays and everything. So that lifestyle didn't really wasn't super, that lifestyle wasn't for me. And the military lifestyle was good for a while, but I was getting towards the 10-year mark, and you really have to make a decision whether or not you're going to do the full 20 or you're going to get out. So I decided to do something else, and I got out. But being in military logistics, I was like, oh wow, you know, moving stuff around, that's interesting. So, you know, I went to school, and you know, I got my degree in supply chain management, and you know, so, and then, from there, the moving company I was working at hired me right out of college. That was in Cincinnati. Cause, I went to the Miami University, the one in Ohio.
Okay.
No, it's University of Miami, the U Ohio. Down in Florida. And then there's Miami University, the one in Ohio.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I went there and graduated that. Did the whole GI Bill thing, which was super nice. and found my way down here after that, and kind of faltered around because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. And a lot of times it's who you know and not what you know. And one day I was living in an apartment building, and one of the guys that lived there, you know, I was making conversation with him, and he was he worked over here at this plumbing warehouse. And I was like, oh, warehouse. That's interesting. I like that. You know, bits and bobs and things are just the same as, you know, cans of food. So I got a job there, doing receiving and, then sales. And then, you know, when I moved up to, from San Antonio up to Austin, that's when I got in with that pipe warehouse, because they were kind of owned by the same company, which is straight out of, they got a really big building on Market Street in Philly.
The plumbing house, the plumbing warehouse.
Yeah. The plumbing company that I work for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was called Hajoka.
Ah, have you ever heard of it? Yeah. Yes, I have. Yes, yeah. I have. And I didn't know that's how you pronounce it.
It was one of those amalgamations of like three different dudes' last name.
I gotcha.
That's how it came to be, man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying, because I know I recognize that name, and if it's the place I'm thinking of, receiving was a pain in the butt to get to, a real pain in the butt. Have you ever been there?
No.
Ah, okay.
I've seen pictures of it on Market Street. It's still got the gigantic, you know, etched in stone with William Penn as their symbol and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've moved out of there. I think they're out in Ardmore now.
Gotcha. That's a little better an area, a little more spacious. Not much, but you know,
still too close.
Still too close to the city.
Well, the kind of corporate structure is more and more about acquisitions. So they'll go and buy a supply warehouse brand and kind of bring them under the corporate fold.
That's neat.
So like there's affiliates from one side of the country to the other up in Canada and everything too.
Oh, wow. That's excellent. Yeah. So they're pretty large.
They're a very large private company.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
It's probably why you don't hear about them.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
So what is this whole falling off the stairs thing?
Oh yeah, we had some rickety stairs going up to one of the docks at that plumbing warehouse. And, you know, I toppled off of them because they fell over.
Ooh.
So you weren't doing anything stupid. You just were on stupid stairs.
Yep. I was on some stupid stairs, and then I brought my welder in and I fixed it all because they were pretty rickety. And then like the next day a truck backed into them and messed them up again.
No way. Yeah.
Oh, well. At least you tried.
I tried.
Man, that sucks. So that warehouse, it sounds like it was an old building, probably lots of issues.
Nah, it's fairly new, but
really,
you know,
lots of issues.
Lots of issues.
Lots of issues, though, regardless.
Well, when trucks are backing into your building, literally, not it does tend to take some wear and tear on a building. Yeah, it'll happen.
You know, unloading all those water heaters, they'd have a full stack. I mean, came straight up from from the plant in Mexico. So it was stacked on the floor. You had to dolly out every single one, and they were packed in there.
Wow. That's a lot of friggin' work, dude.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And don't let me start about the soft-sided trailers, the ones with the cloth sides.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because those guys, they'll back the truck up to the dock and then open up the soft sides.
Uh-huh.
So when you drive a forklift on there, you have like, you feel like you're falling. You're going to fall off the truck every time you drive a forklift on there to pull
out. Oh, I bet. Wow. Yes, sir.
Yeah. That would be nerve wracking. What's the runaway dumpster all about?
I was just thinking about that one too. Yeah. I was like, that looks interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So, you know how big a 30-yard dumpster is? Yeah. The big roll on roll off things. Well, I was, throwing away some trash and, they drop them off and they've got the, they've got a, like a really big swing open door in the back. So I was jamming in some like old beat up, like bathtubs in there. And I didn't realize that they were on wheels, and it started to like slowly inch away as I'm like driving a forklift full of like trash and stuff to like jam as much stuff in there as possible. And it's going downhill, and I'm going, it was one of those, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. So I like back the forklift up, have to like floor it past this trailer that, or this dumpster that's picking up steam, heading right for one of our trucks and like whip it in front of it. And like this, this, this dumpster slams into the side of the forklift, and I'm kind of like, that could have been bad.
So
that
you had, you literally had to put yourself in front of the dumpster to stop it. And that was the relief. That's, that's the funny part. I find that the funny part. You know, like most, like, I don't know, like the way I'm picturing, I'm like, well,
so much for that truck.
So much for that truck. Exactly.
They have insurance. It'll cover it.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, because I'm thinking to myself, man, put in the fork, like, it sounds like it could have hurt. Did it hurt at all?
No. Those forklifts are like a heavy duty. Heavy.
Is it the heavy duty type of forklift? Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. Yeah, we generally had two. We had the big one and the small one. The small one being like the smallest you could kind of maneuver. Okay. The ones that would go inside it in and out of a truck, but you would not drive the big one in a truck.
Yeah, those things are like, you know what, 10,000-15,000 pounds, something like that.
Yeah. I know that if the weight rating is 3,000 pounds, like if it can lift 3,000 pounds, there's 3,000 pounds on the counterweight on the back. Because those things are like solid cast iron.
Yeah, I see guys like racing around the forklifts and stuff, and I'm just like, my goodness, that looks like it would hurt if it smacked me.
Yeah.
Oh, they suck, don't they?
Yeah, don't even start on those electric forklifts, man.
Oh, I never drove those.
Yeah, the ones with the joystick. Yeah, they kind of sit sideways
for picking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They call it a reach truck because you would flip like a little, you would toggle a little switch on your thumb.
Yeah, like a scissors.
And it would stick the fork, it would extend the forks out and bring them back. Yeah, like a little scissor lift thing. Yeah, that's when I was driving that. And I was picking up a double stack of water heaters. Like it was four water heaters on a pallet and then another pallet of four like set on top of it, but with a bunch of plastic wrap around it. So they're all kind of together. And they put those at the very top rack. So, and you gotta crane your head out sideways and to see the forks up, lift, get them in, extend the forks out, pick them up, kind of tilt them back a little bit and bring them back. And then they get kind of caught and then they release and then they teeter back and forth and back and forth. Wow. And then down they came. And I'm screaming, look out, look out, look out. And then just go boom, right next to my head. It was...
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that freaking makes my feet go cold. I always fear having like a head injury from something, you know, like that smacking me. Scares the crap out of me.
Well, the thing is, the forklift has like a cage around it, but you know, when that thing started teetering and I knew that it was gonna go over, dude, you basically tuck in, like. I'm in the safest place possible. You can't run.
Right.
So you just kind of tuck in and hope for the best. And they crashed down right next to this forklift. And I was like, whew. But then I was, pretty mad at myself. For
is that something you get in trouble for or not really? Cause it happens often.
Cause then I had to turn them up.
Yeah.
It happens more often than you'd think.
Like, come on, man, get it together.
But,
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
You know, it's like that that old scene in you ever seen Inglourious Basterds? So at the scene at the very end when he's like, "You'll be shot for this." He's like, "Nah, I don't think so. Probably chewed out. I've been chewed out before."
I can imagine that I mean, how do you what I guess your boss hears it. I guess they hear it happen. Yeah, once they find out you're okay, then everything changes.
Like, you okay? You okay? Okay? All right, good. Clean it up.
Kind of like parenting.
Yeah. You make sure everybody's all right, and then.
Oh, yeah. I had to do that parenting moment earlier today. It was interesting. We're not going to get into it today, though. That's for sure. So the moving company, did you have a trailer that hit the back of a bridge, or was it somebody else? Yeah, tell me about this.
Oh, it was one of the drivers. Oh, we occasionally we'd send trucks to New York, and there was maybe like two drivers that would actually want to go, because then they were like, "Man, I got to get my miles. I got to get my miles." And I was like, "Well, I got to run to New York," and they're like, "I'll do it." So him and his son took this load out to New York. And they came across the low bridge and they aired down so they could get under it. But then they thought they were completely under it. But that back trailer frame wasn't quite cleared. And they hammered it down and it jumped and that back frame caught and just ripped it pretty much sideways. So they had, so this thing comes rolling in with like eight or nine ratchet straps holding the back of this trailer up.
Duct tape and wire ties, dude. That holds the world together.
Duct tape and wire ties.
I think I told the story on the show once before where I was with a company and we used to deliver and pick up cop machines, Rico. And the guy who was driving, we were in Philadelphia, and I think it was Philly, and he pulls the truck up on the curb to kind of get out of the way, and he gets caught, the top of the box of the truck, he gets caught on the steel cable going on the telephone line. And all we hear is this, like, and it cut right through the top of the roof like butter. And so for the rest of the day, because we had like all these packing blankets we used to make sure the printers were okay. Well, those packing blankets were used for something else that day. And we stuffed the roof with these because like it was raining and stuff. Uh-huh. And so we stuffed the roof with all these blankets. So we had like you're driving down the road and you have these blankets just hanging out the top of the roof of the truck. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm just glad I can safely say that I have never taken a roof off a truck. I've seen it happen a lot, you know, but I have never done it. And it's because I think it's partly because I'm a little OCD. Like I'm very obsessive when it comes to the clearances and making sure that I'm good, like especially in areas, because when you're in an area, you know, you don't really worry about it because you know where you can go. But when it was an area that I wasn't familiar with, my Lord, I was looking at every freaking sign. People are honking at me because I'm driving too slow. But the last thing I want to do is turn down a road I shouldn't be down and be screwed. And so, and that happened early enough in my driving career that maybe that's what scarred me. But I was just like, there's no way. I ain't doing that. Just read the freaking signs. Read the freaking signs.
And hope no neighborhood could has taken the signs away.
That's what I was going to say. In Philadelphia, the signs really don't mean a whole lot. Yeah. I'm sure that's like that where in a lot of cities and stuff, and really anywhere. Rewiring trailers in one with snow on it in the back lot. What happened?
Perfect. That was the moment that I decided to not work for that company anymore. Yeah. So he had an old trailer up against the dock, and it was, you know, early winter. So it had snowed, but the sun came out and all the snow was gone except for all the snow that was on top of this trailer. Well, he didn't, you know, my boss didn't like the that empty trailer sitting next to the the dock. So he had somebody pick it up and park it out in the back lot, which was, I mean, way over there, so to speak. But then he wanted me to change all the lights on the trailer. So, okay. Where's the trailer? And he's like, oh, it's way over there. I'm like, could you have somebody bring it closer? Nope, don't have any trucks here. Get it done. I'm like, okay. So I take a 16-foot ladder and drag a ladder all the way out there to this trailer and climb up top on top of it. Well, not really on top of it, because you really can't stand on those things. It's all, you know, they're tinfoil and fiberglass, you know? So I pull the marker lights off the top of this thing, and the wiring's just all kinds of grutty, which is why the lights don't work. So I have to march all the way back to get my tools, then walk all the way back. And then I'm rewiring these trailer lights, and this melting snow is just streaming down this trailer, and it's getting all over my hands, and it's 32 degrees, and I'm just mad as can be. I'm like, the hell with this place. I'm done, you know, but you know, I had to get the job done. I had to finish out the day before I was like, yep, yeah, I'm ready to go. So yeah, that was kind of a low point, just having ice cold water running down my hands and off my elbows while I'm 16 feet up on a ladder
and not fall,
hugging this trailer, trying to crimp yeah. wires.
And I imagine they weren't paying you $40 an hour to do it either. So it would have made it more worth it.
It's funny. Everybody has that moment.
No.
You know, oh, yeah. That job and that moment where it's like, oh, you know what? I'm done. Yep. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. This is my last one.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
it happens.
Yep. That's happened several times with me. I'm just sitting here staring off. It really has. I your hands up, and
you know, I'll be honest with you, that happens to me every day. Every day is that day. I'm like, I am done. I'm not doing this anymore. And yeah, I go back tomorrow.
Yep.
I have to.
I remember I was working in a car garage, and I worked in a different car garage before that, and I came from an environment where, you know, I was respected in the garage, and, you know, it was a good camaraderie, to a place where they didn't give a crap who I was. And there was no camaraderie amongst the guys. And what was camaraderie was just stupid. It was like it was just a bunch of young guys that were just dumb. And I just remember I would talk to the manager and stuff and be like, listen, man, you know, I'd like to do this, that, and the other, just telling them like I can do more than, you know, scrub windshields or something, you know, like it was just ridiculous. And he was just like, no, this is what we have for you. And I'm just like, the next day I was supposed to show up at like 8:30, and I called it like 8:45. I'm like, hey man, I'm not going to be in anymore. Mm-hmm. Deuces. Like, I'm just like, I'm out, man.
You know, I tried working in a garage one time.
Did you?
Yes. Your mom didn't respect me, so I walked out and said, I'm not coming back anymore. You clean the garage yourself. All right, that's an old man joke. Yeah, sorry.
That is. But I called my wife, I'd say probably, I was in Philadelphia, and I was for Pitt, and I'm pulling these like cloth rolls to the back of my trailer. And the guys that were there didn't have the equipment to get it off the truck. And I'm in Philly, and it's like, it was one of those runs where you only had like two or three stops. It was because it was a pain in the butt day. They didn't load you up kind of thing, the full trailer, but it's just pain. And I'm just like, I just got to get this freaking off so I can get out of the city. Cause I knew if I emptied out, they'd send me, cause it was a time of day where I was like, if I empty out now, they're going to send me so place. And so I'm like, okay. So I take a strap, and I wrap it around the end of this cloth roll. And these are long, like long rolls. And I'm just pulling it to the back of this trailer. And I get the one to the back of the trailer, and the strap slipped, and I fell off the back of the trailer. And they had these saw horses that we were sliding the rolls onto. And I landed my back right across the saw horse. Mm. and it hurt so bad. I got in the truck and I was crying. I was in a lot of pain. And I called my wife and I was like, I'm done. I'm quitting. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And she goes, yeah, no. Like, she's like, I feel for you. I understand, but no.
Sorry.
You're not quitting. And I didn't. So.
Tears and all.
Yeah.
All right, hon.
Yeah, I thought for sure I could give her a sob story that would, you know, give me the green light, but nope, not today. Oh, man. Well, Eric,
it happens.
Thanks for hanging out with us and chatting. Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. Before we get out of here, though, I forgot to say this last week. Happy birthday, Dad.
Oh, well, that's awfully nice of you.
Absolutely. How old are you now? 100? 200?
Yes.
Just turned 50, son. Just turned 50. 53. There you go. I got young parents, for those of you who do math well. I got young parents.
Yeah, he wore us out when we were younger. And now we're just old.
Yeah.
We're old young parents.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But, you know, seriously, happy birthday. Thanks. I wanted to say it last week and I forgot to. So I wanted to make sure I say it. Happy birthday to you this week. And maybe you'll get some happy birthday voicemails.
Hey, you never know.
You know? Yeah. Maybe somebody has a really good singing voice.
That would be
sings
cool.
Sings happy birthday in the voicemail line.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I envision after the intro and this outro, we're going to have a really wild voicemail line next
we'll
week.
Have a really full voicemail
yeah,
line.
Yeah, very full.
Your mom and your wife won't have to worry about talking. That's how I did that. Your mom and your wife. Your mom and your wife. Yeah. Not you know, your wife and my wife.
Yeah, but it's going to be a fun week next week. I'm looking forward to it. And I don't even remember the last time I recorded something with Lindsay. It had to be well over a year ago. We did something, I'm sure. But anyways, tune in for that show. It's going to be fun hearing the ladies of our lives.
It is going to be cool.
Yeah. And then, well, just share the show, guys.
Yeah,
like always. Usual. We want you to share it. Hit us up on Instagram, Hammer Lane Legends on Instagram. We do have a Discord, and I will add the link to the description of this episode, so you can go ahead and join the Discord if you like. Dad, I'll explain to you what a Discord after we're done recording.
I was just in my head. I'm like, I'm going to ask a really old man question.
Trust me.
You already knew.
But seriously, trust me. Like, I don't even know what a Discord is. People have been asking me to start a Discord for years, and I have not done it because I'm like, what is Discord? I finally started Discord. I think I got the basics down, and so now it's just like, okay, we have a Discord.
You know what? It's just too much social media. It's like,
let me just break it down real quick. They call it a server, but basically what it is you start like your own channel. So like Hammer Lane Legends has a channel which they call servers, and the first thing you have is just the general channel in there where people can go in. It's like a chat room where it's just
cool.
You can scroll through days of chats of just anybody that's in there you know, chatting. But then you can set up different channels, so like there's a general, but then you can set up one for like flatbed truckers, you know, LTL drivers and guys who are in that industry that have something that they want to share pertaining to those industries could go in and just, you know, have a conversation.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, so it is kind of neat. It just took me a while to figure it out, and it's pretty simple, but I just didn't get it. And the funny thing is I'd have people over the years say, hey, you should start Discord. I'm like, okay, how do I do it? I don't know.
Don't suggest something you don't know how to do.
Yeah, like, how do you use it? I'm not sure, but it seems pretty cool. Okay. Well, yeah,
hey, why don't you become a rocket scientist?
Exactly.
How do I do that? I don't know,
but I think you can do it. I believe in you. But yeah, I mean, go ahead, check out the Discord server if you want, and as always, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and all that fun stuff. But friends, until next week, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.